Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, we talk about the outgoing First Lady, Michelle Obama.
I want our young people to know that they matter, that they belong. So don't be afraid. You hear me? Young people, don't be afraid. Be focused. Be determined. Be hopeful. Be empowered. Empower yourselves with a good education. Then get out there and use that education to build a country worthy of your boundless promise. Lead by example with hope, never fear. And know that I will be with you, rooting for you and working to support you for the rest of my life. And that is true, I know, for every person who is here today, and for educators and advocates all across this nation who get up every day and work their hearts out to lift up our young people.
Michelle Obama, her farewell speech that was delivered last Friday. Our guest this hour has been covering Michelle Obama for a number of years, and Barack Obama as well. Jody Cantor is a New York Times reporter. She is author of The Obamas, The Partnership Behind a Historic Presidency. The book is going to be re-released tomorrow, and that will be on the occasion of President Obama's farewell address in Chicago. There was a front page story, very interesting one, in the New York Times. It was the Sunday Review section yesterday. I'm sure many of you saw it. Michelle Obama's turn. The mom-in-chief charmed late-night hosts. Now is she ready to speak with her fuller voice? We'll be welcoming phone calls for Jody as we talk about Michelle Obama and her 8 years as First Lady, and whether or not there's a larger and political place for her as she moves out of the White House. She will be, as Jody reminds us, 53 when she leaves the White House, and her goal is to look at her life afresh. Will she, being arguably the most powerful African-American woman in the country, be urged to run for office herself or find some place where we can hear that fuller voice of Michelle Obama? Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. Jody, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you covered the Obamas for a long time and covered Michelle for, what, about 6 years?
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about the kind of voice you heard from her early on in the presidency and how she had to fashion it in a way that was different than who she was when she was a lawyer in Chicago or working in community organizing in Chicago. How she had to fit her voice to this office of First Lady.
Well, she had to edit it, basically. Her statements as First Lady were authentic. I never heard anything fake. I never heard false notes, exactly. But what I heard was a much narrower and more constricted version of who she was in Chicago. You know, when you talk to old friends and aides and people who really know Michelle Obama, they describe her as a very deep social critic. Mm-hmm. A Harvard-trained lawyer who really knew how to thwack home an argument. They describe her as somebody who really had a lot of independent observations of her own, and someone who's a real questioner, who would, you know, ask the big questions about unfairness, about justice, about how the world works. That is a really hard role to play as First Lady, and as we know, she also had the challenge of being the first African-American First Lady. So when around the spring and summer of 2008, when the president became the Democratic nominee for president, we really saw Michelle Obama attacked very heavily. You know, she had a couple of words that were off here and there. They were taken out of context. They were used to kind of create these caricatures of her. And so she made a very strategic decision. She decided that she was going to play it fairly safe. If even being married to someone who's running for president can be described as playing it safe. But she started making much more conventional, narrower statements, and we saw this in most of her years as First Lady. She did things like spending a lot of time in the White House garden, and she called herself the mom-in-chief. She took on issues that are very important but are just not controversial. She was pro-veteran. She was anti-childhood obesity, and the kind of, you know, original, surprising, deep, very blunt, and very forceful Michelle Obama kind of disappeared from the scene. That was the private version that people close to her got to experience. The question we're seeing now is, I think, you know, whether some of that is going to come back to the fore for two reasons. One is that she won't be married to the president anymore. You know, when they lift off on a helicopter on Inauguration Day, they will really be leaving the presidency and a lot of its obligations behind. But the second thing is that she's going to be living in Donald Trump's America like the rest right. of us. And we know that that is a place that she really objects to. My suspicion is that if Hillary Clinton had won the presidency, if a more conventional Republican had won the presidency, I think Michelle Obama would be on track to kind of take the Laura Bush attitude towards being an ex-first lady. And what I mean about that is being really above it all, removed from the fray, not really engaging in the news on a day-to-day basis, really relish your privacy, take a break from being on the public stage. However, what we saw in the speech that you played is that she feels really called to the moment in many ways. And so the decision for her, and I talked to her advisors, and they really don't know what she's going to do. The decision for her is going to be how vocal she should be. If there is a lot that happens that she objects to, is she going to speak out? How is she going to speak out? What kind of voice are we going to hear from her?
Yeah. Well, and she has spoken out about Donald Trump, and we'll hear a portion of that speech about sexual assault, his bragging about sexual assault, which was a powerful moment by her. You write early in your piece that was in the Times yesterday, on January 20th, she will hand her home over to a man who rose to power in part by spreading lies about her husband and intends to pulverize much of his work. She will carry herself through inauguration morning with quiet calm and few hints of what she is really thinking. But there are times when she lets us know what she's really thinking, aren't there, Jody?
Well, it's a great question. So my book, The Obamas, is about the President and First Lady's adjustment to the White House. And in it, you can read a lot of the behind-the-scenes story of what they found when they got there. And even as people who had really prepared themselves for public life, I think the shock was still enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to get to what you were asking about, you know, in terms of sort of saying what you mean. But that world is just so strange for somebody who has never spent time there. I know that Americans have a very glamorous view of the White House, but we don't really see what's hard about it. The confinement, the restrictions, the constant criticism, the feeling that you can't even step out your front door without looking great because somebody will blog about it. The fact that advisors are like debating every aspect of your life, including where you should go on vacation and what you should wear. And I think in that atmosphere, it is really hard to communicate in exactly the way that you want to. So I do think that Michelle Obama managed to communicate really well with the American people, but she did it in a very calculated, strategic way. This is somebody who gave even minor speeches from a teleprompter, who moved a podium into her office and practiced them again and again before she delivered them. At the same time, I think what you mean about how there was like no real confusion about what she really believed was really true in a lot of ways. First of all, she had a lot of subtle ways of sending signals to her audience, right? Sometimes even the kind of dress that she would wear would carry great significance. Also, I don't think there was ever a lot of doubt about what Michelle Obama's, you know, fundamental political beliefs were. However, she really resisted weighing in. If you think about even some of the most searing events of the presidency, something like the Newtown massacre, we heard from the president and not from her. I mean, you could almost sort of say that you know, she epitomized the old, was it Chanel, Coco Chanel, who said that elegance is refusal, and took a very restrained approach in the age of social media, where, you know, everybody is constantly broadcasting their opinion all the time. She really did not do that.
Mm-hmm. And yet, when you look at some of the work that she did, and you talk about this in the article, I haven't read your book yet, but I will certainly. Her early work in Chicago, I find this really interesting, and I know people who worked with her, actually, and with Barack Obama, because I'm from Chicago back in those years, who always thought that it was a toss-up who was going to run for higher office, because
yeah,
she was brilliant.
I've heard other people say the same thing. And also, it's funny, you know, she likes politics a lot less than the president does, but she does have that incredible charisma, and in some ways
yes.
She connects with people more naturally than he does in some settings.
Mm-hmm. And this work that she did, which was very much, you know, it was political in a sense, but she took on the University of Chicago for ignoring the Southside Black community, which was, you know, part of their neighborhood. You recall in your article yesterday that this public service training for young people, which she found so compelling of disparate backgrounds, University of Chicago alumni alongside veterans of housing projects and gangs. Those experiences fused her own point of view and a distinctive voice. And I think that voice still comes out, doesn't it?
Well, the question is whether it will come out, you know, ever more strongly. And also remember that she'll have a lot more choice about what to do now. In a way, she could go to either extreme more. She could live a completely private life for the rest of her life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she could say, I'm no longer the first lady. You know, maybe I'll write one book. Here are my memoirs. And then after that, you know, I never felt a call to public life. You know, I don't need to weigh in on things. I don't need to make constant public appearances. I want to be, you know, my goal is to return to being, you know, as normal a person as I can. Or I could see her voice being far greater and being far amplified, and her having a chance to really be an advocate for what she believes in. You know, we don't. It's not like we have a bunch of other African American former first ladies,
right?
Who are,
exactly.
You know, sitting around the country who are going to play that role. There is only one Michelle Obama. And, you know, I'll say something also about something I've seen in politics for a long time, which is that when people want to hear from you, it is very hard to resist. You know, and social media kind of amplifies it now, right? And this is, right now, it's a point of devastation for Democrats. The party has really been shattered by the election results. A new strategy is only beginning to reemerge. There are some really painful and bitter fights about what happened in the election and what the party strategy should be on the whole. And people are crying out to hear, I think, and will, especially once they leave office, people will cry out to hear both Obamas. And they'll have to make some really careful decisions about how they respond to that. There's also a big difference, you know, even though we say, okay, you know, maybe Michelle Obama will speak out more, there's a big question about what that means, right? Because on the one hand, there's a lot of thirst for them to be kind of partisan defenders, right? For them to counter Trump and counter the Republicans and be exemplars of progressive causes, which they certainly believe in. But that said, both Obamas and particularly the president, they've always felt the desire to rise above and to transcend, right? I mean, Barack Obama is the guy who rose to power in 2004 by standing up and giving a speech saying, there's no red America and blue America, there's just the United States mm-hmm. of America. And even at a bitter and polarized time, I think it's possible that the president in particular may still want to heed that call.
Mm-hmm. Is she going to appear with him tomorrow night in Chicago? Will she be on stage with him?
She is. I mean, I know she's going to Chicago. I don't know the details of the appearance.
Mm-hmm. That will be some speech as well. She has become this very electrifying, commanding presence on the stage. She is one heck of a speaker now, don't you think?
Well, I think that's part of what... She always had a lot of natural charisma. So I'll share with you some of my history of watching
sure.
Michelle Obama. When I started covering her, it was... 2007, and the place where she was really effective were these Iowa living rooms. You know, being in
really?
Wisconsin, you're only a state or two away from Iowa, right? So your listeners know a lot about the Iowa caucus and the political process there, I bet. And you know about how it really starts early in the process as like a bunch of meetings in people's living rooms. So imagine, you know, in 2007, these Iowans are, you know, sitting around eating cookies or whatever, and in strides this tall, graceful, impassioned, very smart candidate's wife. This is still the point in American politics where people are like, who is Barack Obama? What kind of name is that? You know, I've never even heard of the guy. And she's vouching for him, and she's explaining who he is. And she connected extraordinarily well in those settings. I think what she's learned, to take that as the starting point, right, and bring it all the way up to the clip you played and what we heard on Friday, what she's learned to do, and you'll see some of this behind-the-scenes process in my book, is that she learned to hone that voice and to broadcast it on the biggest possible stage, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. speaking to a group of people in a living room is not the same as being able to broadcast your voice out, you know, on that national and global scale. So that's what, that is really what we've seen her learn to do. And so there's that question, right, of how is she going to use that power? And also, if she were here on the program with us, I would ask whether she enjoys it more and is able to enjoy it, you know, in a way that she didn't necessarily. She is not somebody, she's not one of these people who, like, you know, those natural politicians, you sometimes even meet them, you know, at grade school or whatever at a very young age, and they just light up, you know, when they have an audience, you know,
right.
they, you know, the cameras go on and there's like a new spark in their eye. She was never like that. She was often kind of like funny in a sort of sarcastic, eye-rolling way about campaigning. She would sometimes say earlier in her husband's political career that the only good thing about campaigning was getting to check out the furniture in other people's living rooms and getting home decor tips. So this is, I sometimes have trouble telling people this because people say, oh, you know, Michelle Obama, she's so charismatic, she's so good on stage. And I say, actually, this was not necessarily her calling in life.
Jodi Kantor is our guest, and she's a reporter for the New York Times. She wrote the piece that appeared in the Sunday Review yesterday on Michelle Obama, and she has spent years covering Michelle Obama. She is the author of The Obamas. It's about the couple's behind-the-scenes adjustment to the jobs of president and first lady, first published in 2012, but it's been updated with a new release scheduled for tomorrow, the day that Barack Obama gives his farewell address in Chicago. Our phone number, we welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm very interested in Jody's response to, I thought this was a pretty powerful moment when Michelle Obama offered quite a powerful rebuke to Donald Trump and his treatment of women when she was campaigning for Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. We'll hear a portion of that and get Jody's reaction to it. But we'll go to phone calls first. So we'll be with you in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. As Jody writes in her piece yesterday in the Times, Michelle Obama may be the most powerful black woman in the country, a position that begs to be used. How do you think that position should be used? Would it be fine with you? She has been our first lady for 8 years, for her to just become a home decorator or just quietly have a lot of book club discussions and comment in private on the issues of the day? Or does this position as being the first African-American woman to be first lady, which is a big deal, and the most powerful black woman in the country, does she need to use that as a way to give herself a fuller voice? And would you like to see her run for political office herself? What do you think? 800-486-8655. 855-905-8255. There's also a whole part of her, and let's wait. Well, let's find this on our list of little Michelle Obama moments. There's also kind of a fun part of her. She did a lot of great dancing. She was wonderful with children. And this is a little clip of one of the reasons she was called Mother-in-Chief, the popular segment in which the First Lady spends an afternoon shopping with Ellen DeGeneres, and they discover boxed wine. It's a fun clip, but we'll talk about the fun side of her with you, Jody, in a moment.
Do you want any of this?
Wine in a box.
Yep, wine in a box.
How does this work? So how do you get it out of here?
Like that.
Wait, where is the tab? Oh, look.
That?
Open here. Well, we're not going to open it, man. We need cups.
I get this one.
No, use that. That's not a cup. That's not an official cup. I think it is a cup. All right, 6 weeks after. You can drink this for 6 weeks after opening? What? You are really not a good person to shop with.
I'm a great person to shop with.
Does anybody know how to open wine in a box?
How do you open wine in a box?
Have you ever had wine in a box?
You with the baby. Come over here. You need wine more than anybody. You have a brand new baby.
There's just such a completely natural quality about her at times, and she can have a lot of fun. It was good to see that on a national stage, Jody.
Here's what I would say about those kind of talk show appearances, they often had two lives, right, because they were broadcast for the first time on a TV show, and then they would go viral on social media. So if you're listening to us here today, I bet that sometime in your Facebook feed in the last couple of years, you've clicked on, some funny thing Michelle Obama has done with a late night host, right, like the mom dancing or some of the other shticks she's done on Ellen, et cetera, et cetera. Those are really fun things to watch. They're not uncalculated, right?
Oh, they're not.
Yeah. I mean, here's what I would say about the way they work. They're intended to counter some of what's happening politically. Now, that last one, it did take place during the election. The Obamas, were already sort of heading out of office at that time, so she may have done that just for fun. But what you would often see is during, one of the more depressing times in the Obama presidency, during a budget battle where everything really felt stuck in Washington or something like that, she would often do those appearances that I think were fun, as you say, but were also intended to send a kind of different message, to the American people, to project the opposite of what was going on in Washington. And, Michelle Obama does not those aren't spontaneous things, right? She's got an office that arranges these things and they negotiate for when she'll be on and the content is discussed beforehand and whatnot. And, especially in the 2012 election, we saw her doing a lot of that. And it was clear that it was intended to humanize the Obamas and to also just project, that sort of positivity to counter a lot of the political fighting.
Oh, that's fascinating. But she would have the ultimate say-so as to whether or not she was going to do an event. I'd like to know how all of that takes place.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really elaborate process. So,
is it?
One of my favorite parts of my book, which is called The Obamas, a new version is coming out tomorrow. And so you can read about how Michelle Obama comes into the East Wing, which is the First Lady's part of the White House, and she's kind of immediately told there are all these events that you kind of have to do, and some of them are really lovely traditions. Some of them were really stuffy, very old, let's say that they were legacies from a time when women really didn't work outside the home, when a political wife was really considered, a classic cheerful helpmeet, there to aid her man. And she had to figure out kind of how to deal with some of these invitations and whether she wanted to do some of these things. And so, she was flooded with invitations. And she has been since the beginning of the presidency. And she has said no to the overwhelming majority of them. One of her decisions early on was that she didn't really want to do like a little bit of this and a little bit of that and do, you know, a breast cancer event on Monday and a heart disease event on Wednesday and then a thing for children on Thursday. She wanted to be very strategic, and that's part of how she came up with the Let's Move program and the work she did on veterans.
Mm. I want to play now what she said about Donald Trump when all the excess Hollywood tapes were revealed, because this was really pointed and very direct. And tell me how calculated this was and what the effect of this was. Here is Michelle Obama on Donald Trump's comments on the excess Hollywood tape.
This is not something that we can ignore. It's not something we can just sweep under the rug as just another disturbing footnote in a sad election season. Because this was not just a lewd conversation. This wasn't just locker room banter. This was a powerful individual speaking freely and openly about sexually predatory behavior and actually bragging about kissing and groping women, using language so obscene that many of us were worried about our children hearing it when we turn on the TV. And to make matters worse, it now seems very clear that this isn't an isolated incident. It's one of countless examples of how he has treated women his whole life. And I have to tell you that I listen to all of this, and I feel it so personally. And I'm sure that many of you do too, particularly the women. The shameful comments about our bodies, the disrespect of our ambitions and intellect, the belief that you can do anything you want to a woman. It is cruel. It's frightening. And the truth is, it hurts. Thick, sinking feeling you get when you're walking down the street, minding your own business, and some guy yells out.
When I hear that, I hear this total authenticity, her saying to somebody, I really have to speak up on this. I really have to talk about this. It's very direct. It's really confrontational to Donald Trump. It was a moment that really made you sit up and completely listen to her, Jody.
Yes. And I would say that I would call that a turning point in her use of her voice as First Lady. It was by far the most impassioned and the most, not just impassioned, it was an impassioned moment, and it was a time when she really chose to wade directly into a controversial issue, which she hadn't done a lot as First Lady. As she very clearly said, I have to speak out. I can't pretend that this is, you know, just another campaign moment in a depressing season. And I think that I really saw that as part of the larger journey of hers that I had chronicled, that we spoke about, from somebody who had been very forthright on the campaign trail to somebody who had to kind of, you know, edit herself a little bit more and learn to become politically cautious. But then once she mastered that, and then also once she felt the moment called for it, I sort of heard her speaking with a new voice and kind of, in a way, fusing, I think, the old Michelle Obama and the new Michelle Obama, you know, finding some of that old directness and force, and yet combining it with kind of her identity and role as First Lady.
Yeah, it was quite a moment. You have to wonder if she won't speak up in the same way. And there's also something about raising two daughters and being a woman speaking on this issue. It was a very difficult very difficult issue for the country to take in. I don't know if you can relate it in some way, maybe so, maybe not, but I recall when the impeachment hearings were taking place for Bill Clinton and the whole discussion of Monica Lewinsky's dress and oral sex, and, you know, I had young people in the house, and I was thinking, are we really? This is what the fodder is for our national news broadcasts? This is what we're talking about? And the same thing with Trump. We're looking at an Access Hollywood tape. this is not good. This is not good for a national discussion.
Well, think about her in the post-presidency and think about whether she'll want to respond to things like that or not. She'll have access to social media accounts, right? She'll probably have some staff, but a smaller staff than she does as first lady. And if you're her, you know, when does she decide to speak out and when does she decide to stay quiet? There are probably going to be things that happen every single day in the United States of America that she will feel object to or sure. feel strongly about, but she's not gonna talk about it every time. And it takes some adjustment when you leave the White House. Former first ladies and presidents have really talked about this. You are really coming out of a bubble, you know, and adjusting to something that isn't exactly like your old life, but is not like the White House either. And on the one hand, I think she might want some time to figure out a new approach. On the other hand, a lot is going to be happening, and the Trump presidency is going to be going on around her. And I think people are going to want to hear from her before too long.
I think you're right. We have an email from CJ. Could you speak to what her mother is going to do once they leave the White House?
Well, her mom has stubbornly resisted any kind of public role, so I certainly don't expect her to take on one right now. But I'm glad you asked about her, because Marianne Robinson really is one of the most fascinating figures in the world of the Obamas. You know, she led a really modest life in Chicago. She was a secretary for many years. She lives in, you know, a small house on the South Side. It definitely, you know, like a really regular person existence. She was actually still working as a secretary during the 2008 presidential campaign. She retired during that period. And when she lived, she still lives in the White House, she's really been the only person who's been allowed to, like, just sort of slip in and out the front gates without any security.
Oh, really?
Interesting. Oh, yeah, huh. Absolutely. And she enjoyed not being recognized. I mean, she would joke about how, you know, she would say things like, you know, people look at me at Filene's basement, you know, and they think I'm just like another person who works in the mansion, meaning the White House, you know, as if she's like a member of the domestic staff or something. But she has played a really key role, in part because of the security arrangements I just described. The president needs, like, I'm barely exaggerating when I say that he needs like a 21-car motorcade, you know, to go down the street.
Right.
The security is just extremely cumbersome. Michelle Obama doesn't require quite as much security, but she does require some. So she doesn't have what we would describe as complete freedom of movement. But her mom does. And so that really gave her mom a special power that none of the other adults in the household had. So she took on a lot of the, I wouldn't say primary child rearing responsibilities, but things like moving with the girls around the city or taking them to school or just taking them out to a movie or to walk around a mall or whatever. It was much easier to do with grandma than it was with mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. Pat emails, I loved how Michelle was so supportive of the show Hamilton. They had Lin-Manuel Miranda over to the White House just for poetry, and he started to talk about how he was writing this show and how great a rapping subject America's first Treasury Secretary was. She got me to see the show, and she was right. It was one of the best ones I've ever seen.
So I think both of the Obamas were really strong champions of arts and culture, and I think also sent a message often by who they invited to the White House. Even like the movie screenings that they hosted could help you sort of read a lot about their interests. So there's one thing I forgot to say about Marianne Robinson, Mrs. Obama's mother, that I just want to add because it's maybe my favorite detail about her. As I said, she led a modest life. She was not a wealthy woman at all. And amid, you know, raising kids, by the way, her husband had multiple sclerosis as Mrs. Obama and her brother Craig were growing up. So it was not an easy life. And she never really had money to travel. So when the Obamas got to the White House, they used to take her along on foreign trips. And you know how the foreign trips are, you know, they're really big state affairs. And there are arrival ceremonies and, you know, receiving lines, and you know that, like, famous moment when the president and the first lady come down the stairs when right. they get to the new country. So Marian Robinson would go with them, and, like, her first foreign trip with them was the first time she had ever been out of the United States.
Oh, isn't that something?
So can you imagine being out of the United States
right.
for the first time, and you get off the plane, and instead of going through, you know, customs like everybody else, you're coming down with the carpet and the band and the
right.
flowers.
That will never happen again. It's just a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Nancy in Milwaukee, hi.
Hello, I would just like to go back to the comments that were made a few minutes ago about how distressed Michelle was concerning the comments that Trump has always made about women. And that is that was one thing that I found hard to understand, the fact that Hillary seemed to be, I should put it this way, that both Obama and Michelle were so heartily in favor of having Hillary win this election when they knew that if she did, Bill would be being put back into the White House as well, and Bill's opinions about women are exactly like Trump's. So I found that very hard to understand, and I speak as a very strong Obama and Michelle supporter. Actually, I think Michelle is absolutely the epitome of all womanhood, and I am very distressed that they have to leave. I certainly wish it had been possible for them to have sought a third term. But I did find that one issue very hard to understand, because Bill would then be back in the White House, and his opinions about women are just like Trump's.
Yeah, it was a difficult issue for Hillary.
Well, you're not the only person to say that.
Uh-huh.
And I'll give you a theory that certainly none of us can prove, but that makes sense. You say to yourself, why did Michelle Obama, you know, make that speech when it's so different from most of the other speeches she made as First Lady? Why did she speak out? I'm a big believer in trying to take people at their words, at face value, right? So when she says, this has just disturbed me so much, and it was on my mind, and I couldn't just go out and give my regular speech, and this really, you know, this is so offensive, and we have to call this out, I think we should take her seriously. However, there may be another bit of political logic that was at work in the Democratic Party, and it's the one you're talking about, which is that Hillary Clinton was not in a strong position to call out those comments because her husband has this really complicated history with his relationship with women. I don't really want to speak to how similar or different to Trump's it is or isn't, because it's a really complicated situation and there's much that we don't know. But certainly he's had problems over the years, at least outside of his marriage. And one of the strengths of the Obamas has really always been that they form this kind of impeccable family picture, right? And
yes.
There's a wholesomeness and an intactness, even a traditionalism, to be honest, to their family that many people find very, very appealing. So the theory I would lay out for you, you know, is, you know, was there some coordination there? And was it decided that Michelle Obama would be the one who would speak out most strongly about that?
Yeah, I'm sure that did take place, aren't you?
I don't like this, but, you know, I try to make a clear division, you know, whether it's on the radio or in my book or in the newspaper, between, like, what we really know for sure and can document versus, you know, what seems likely or probable. And, yeah, I think we should hold to that distinction
right.
here.
Nonetheless, it doesn't discount from the fact that when she spoke, she was speaking from the heart about this. There was nothing phony about what she said or seemingly planned, really. It was just direct and forceful, to the point, very much who she is.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything in the White House is pretty planned. And Michelle Obama did not have a lot of, like, spontaneous planned utterances as First Lady. The distinction I would make is that I think she was very authentic as First Lady, but that doesn't mean that things weren't also very choreographed.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about Michelle Obama this hour of the program with the author of the national bestseller, The Obamas. And Jodi Kantor's book will be released again tomorrow, different version, new updated version of her best-selling book. It's being released on the day that President Obama gives his farewell speech in Chicago. Jodi has spent years reporting on the Obamas, and she is, the new edition is the early, well, tomorrow, actually. She was previously the New York editor of Slate Magazine and the Times Art and Leisure editor. We have lines open. What do you think is her role now? What would you like to see her role be? How has she performed as First Lady? We love to hear your comments. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. We're listening to some of Michelle Obama's words during this hour. This is a powerful speech that she gave on discrimination to Tuskegee University graduates in May of last year.
The world won't always see you in those caps and gowns. They won't know how hard you worked and how much you sacrificed to make it to this day. And my husband and I know how frustrating that experience can be. We've both felt the sting of those daily slights throughout our entire lives. The folks who crossed the street in fear of their safety. The clerks who kept a close eye on us in all those department stores. The people at formal events who assumed we were the help. And those who have questioned our intelligence, our honesty, even our love of this country.
The roommate who moved out because she had Michelle Obama as a roommate, and Michelle was black. And this was at Princeton, Jodi. You write about that.
Yes. Yes. And the roommate's comments, we spoke to her years later. The roommate's, I actually tell my daughter the story sometimes because the roommate says that it was one of her biggest regrets that she did that.
I imagine.
They were both very young. The roommate was from a very traditional Southern family. The roommate later said that it was her mom who was really horrified that she had been assigned to room with a black girl. Her mom kind of put all this pressure on her, and, you know, she was young. She caved. And she said, we talked to her during the 2008 campaign, and you know, you could just feel her regret. She said things like, Michelle Obama and I could have been really close, I was her roommate, you know, and I wasted the opportunity to have, some sort of deep relationship with her. So, I don't tell my daughter that in the spirit of, you know, ooh, wow, it'd be so great to be friends with Michelle Obama. I try to, just as a mother, say, you just never know who anybody you meet, especially, you know, when you're young, is going to turn out to be.
Mm-hmm. Be kind. She also had an aunt who was working as a maid in Boston. Is that right?
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really interesting about both Obamas is that they've moved around class-wise a lot in mm-hmm. their lives. If you look at a Donald Trump or a George Bush, they were born wealthy, stayed wealthy, you know, had fluctuations, but never anything as dramatic as each of the Obamas. And Michelle Obama is from really humble roots. Her dad was a city water worker. Her mom, we said, worked as a secretary. I think one of her grandfathers was a handyman. So when she and her brother went to Princeton, there happened to be an aunt who worked as a domestic worker in town, and she used to cook Southern meals for Michelle Obama and her brother. And so, you know, we can kind of imagine the experience of going from that. If you've ever seen Princeton, it's this really fancy, really grand campus, you know, this place that has the feeling of, like, the elite of the elite. You know, and then she's going to her aunt's house for dinner, which would have been a completely different experience. What people say about her is that it made her comfortable in both settings.
Hmm. Luba in Madison, hi.
Yes, well, thank you for the opportunity. Now, I'd like to have some information about her travels abroad. Now, it's always been mentioned that she's going abroad or she's been somewhere, but I never get more information than that. So I have some details.
Where did she go during, well, probably a lot of places? What really struck her?
She's traveled all over the world as First Lady. I would say the main motif of her trips has really been spreading this idea of opportunity and growing up to be who you want to be. She sometimes did, you know, these sort of very official events with the president, but sometimes she would break off on her own. Like when she went to India, she met with kids who were orphans, you know, and street kids, and she hopscotched with them and she played with them. And she said that her goal was to show kids around the world that they could have opportunity and self-determination.
Hmm. It must have been awfully difficult to raise two, and they were then very young daughters in the White House. I just can't imagine doing that, Jody. You said you had a daughter. Can you imagine raising her in the White House?
So I have to tell you, in writing my book, I came to look at the White House differently than a lot of people do. I know Americans have these really glamorous images of the White House, and we see the pictures of the state dinners and you know, people like to go on White House tours and whatnot. I don't think it's that glamorous. Or if it's glamorous, it's also very restricted. Even with things like running around, you know, outside in nice weather, the Obama girls always had to check what was going on beforehand, because if they ran in the wrong direction, they, you know, people could take pictures of them. There are real security risks, too, or security concerns, sure. I should say. Nobody ever likes to talk about this because it's so profoundly disturbing. But those kids had Secret Service protection for a reason, right? And there was even an episode a few years ago where a bullet hit the back of the White House, which, you know, really shouldn't happen. And that was scary. You know, those kids play out back out there. By the way, you know, Barron Trump, to the extent that he spends time in the White House, will do the same thing. His age is not far from the age of the Obama girls when they moved into the White House.
Mm-hmm. And she must have been, she talked on 60 Minutes about how bullying a black man, Barack Obama, could be killed going to the gas station. That must have been something, we have to come to terms with it, but I'm sure that they received their share of threats.
Well, yes, of course. But, you know, I think what we don't know that much about is how they dealt with it. You know, one thing that I frankly don't know and that I think would be hard to find out is the extent to which, you know, either or both Obamas got reports on what really happened. There's a scene in my book where Michelle Obama has a scare. It was nothing. It was completely no big deal. But there was an issue with a motorcade at one point, and she sort of half found out about it. And she really panicked, you know, sitting up there alone and not knowing what had happened. She wasn't sure about how to find out more. And, you know, and they also saw terrible things happen to people they knew. You know, when Gabby Giffords was shot in Arizona, for most of us, it was, you know, just really horrible to see that an elected official could be targeted that way. Generally, for them, they knew her, you know, and for them, that was really terrifying because it showed that entering public life could come with the greatest possible costs.
Yes. So in the minute that we have left, what would you like to see Michelle Obama do?
As a reporter. And
sure. As a
one
reporter.
Of her biographers, I guess what I would say is I'd like her to lead an interesting life because she certainly has so far, and it's been a pleasure and an honor to write about it. But no, I don't. Truly, my point of view is to watch and to look and to listen. And I am sure she will get advice from all sorts of people, but it really won't be me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll look and see. Thank you very much, Jody, for being with us. It's a fascinating hour, and I'm glad the book's being re-released tomorrow.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful to be with you.
Thanks, Jody. Jody Kantor, reporter for The New York Times. She's also a best-selling author. Caught our attention because there was a piece yesterday in the Sunday Review section of The New York Times front page with the portrait of Michelle Obama. And we found out she's the author of The Obamas. She covered the Obamas since 2007, actually. It's about the couple's behind-the-scenes adjustment to the jobs of president and first lady. New edition coming out tomorrow. We thank her. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this show, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production. here in Milwaukee. Coming up tomorrow at this time, the hefty price of healthy food. Why is it that healthy food costs much more than other food? We'll discuss that. And tomorrow and today, coming up on Central Time, NPR's national political correspondent Don Gagne will join Central Time before his stop in Milwaukee for A Nation Engaged, a pre-inauguration conversation. He'll talk about his experience crisscrossing the country to cover the election of 2016. Thank you for listening. News is coming up.